Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Some of you have no doubt seen the movie The Great Raid. Now, let me tell you, if you haven't seen it, you ought to see it, especially if you're adults, especially if you care about America, especially if you are concerned to see that which will demonstrate the very best that Americans can be, really demonstrate what self-giving service will look like. There is controversy over this movie. The movie is a remarkable rescue story. It's about the most successful rescue in the history of the American military when some of the POWs held who were survivors of the Bataan Death March in the Philippines were rescued by a very small corps of very dedicated American soldiers, Army Rangers in the main, who went in 30 miles behind the Japanese lines and rescued them. It is simply one of the greatest stories from American military history. But the movie critics have responded with cynicism, some suggesting that this will just lead to excessive patriotism. This is a real concern of mine, and I have to tell you, we, in the midst of trying to figure out how best to talk to you about this, came across the fact that the man who led that raid is still alive. Colonel Bob Prince, a genuine American hero, is going to be our guest starting in the second segment of this program. You will not want to miss it. You'll want to get your kids, call your neighbors, tell them that they're going to have the opportunity to hear from one of America's most decorated heroes, the man who led the raid on the Cabanatuan POW camp in the Philippines. That coming up in part two. First, a review of issues in the news. Big news on the stem cell front. This is genuinely big news, and it is by any measure good news. It's the kind of good news that finds its way to the headlines and the front pages of America's newspapers. But even in these news reports, there is a sense of glee on the part of all those who care about stem cell research about what has been found. And I find that very encouraging because for the first time, researchers at Harvard University have been able to turn adult stem cells that were drawn from skin cells into embryonic stem cells. That's right. They didn't have to create an embryo. There is no threat here to the sanctity of human life. These researchers took skin cells and reversed the process, turning them into embryonic stem cells. And now, you know, one of the big controversies in the whole area of medicine right now is over the use of human embryonic stem cells, because right now the only way to get these stem cells, which the researchers call totipotent, that is, they're able to turn into virtually any organ or any tissue in the body, the only way to get them right now, according to the scientists working on the problem, is to create a human embryo and destroy it in order to obtain its stem cells. This is incredibly good news. It's good news on more than one front, because this means that an individual's own skin cells can be used through this reversal of the process in order to create embryonic stem cells that could be then transformed if they're able to direct this process. That's the whole big question about stem cell research. If they are able to create therapies out of this, there will be a much lower chance of rejection because, after all, these were cells taken from the patient's own body. Now, I find this absolutely fascinating coming this week because the United States Senate is expected to take up the Human Stem Cell Enhancement Act, and there are considerable calls for persons in the Senate as well as in the House to reverse President Bush's policy that was articulated in August of 2001. There are claims made by many researchers that policy is simply too restrictive. What we have right now is a clash of worldviews between those who believe that the human embryo is a human being and that it would be an ultimate insult to human dignity to destroy a human embryo simply to remove its stem cells, and those who say, what is the embryo anyway? Why should we be so concerned about its status? Look at what can be done with these stem cells in terms of prospective therapies. Well, it would be a genuine breakthrough if we could simply transcend that question. It would be an undeniably wonderful thing if we could have embryonic stem cells without having to create and then destroy a human embryo. We have to hope that this research, which was announced by Harvard University, published this week in Science magazine, Reports already in the Washington Post and other newspapers, we have to hope that this will be successful. Researcher Kevin Eggen and his team at Harvard University are to be congratulated. They say right up front that this is preliminary research. The folks, when they're announcing it like this and reporting it in the science journals, and when Harvard University today puts out a release on its website, you can count on the fact that it may be preliminary, but there's really something to this. And I, for one, am praying that it will be very successful. I'm praying that this will give us a source of embryonic stem cells that will be untainted by controversy, that can be obtained without violating the principle of the sacredness of human life. And I pray also that this will lead to developments that will indeed produce therapies and cures and treatments for diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and spinal cord injuries and so many other of the most dreaded medical challenges faced today. That, by any measure, would be good news. Well, as usual in the news, there is good news and there is bad news. The Sydney Morning Herald in Australia is reporting over the weekend that the rise of what they call, quote, virtual adultery is a new threat to marriages. Let me read to you the lead from their story. Until recently, adultery had been a sin of the flesh. Temptation arrives, chemistry sizzles, and before long, the unfaithful spouse is spending stolen nights in cheap hotels. Now there is a new threat, the virtual affair. While some argue online affairs aren't real, research shows some spouses take them as seriously as the offline variety, and they are becoming a gateway to divorce. Well, let's just call this cyber sinning. The internet has opened all kinds of opportunities, opened entire new industries. It is absolutely amazing. You can go to your computer, and we have a whole new vocabulary. We can now Google as if it's a verb. We can use these search engines in order to get directly to information. If you want to know what the Constitution says, just put in the words and the Constitution will appear. If you're looking for information on medical research, on science, you're looking for virtually any kind of document, you can find it on the web. Gone are the days when you had to go to the public library in order to consult the dictionary or the encyclopedia or standard reference books. Most of them are now available online. That is fantastic. The internet has become an enormous resource for communicating Christian truth, for the gospel. After all, we can put all kinds of material on the internet, and you know what? Governments really can't restrict it. But like every technology, there's a dark side. And the dark side, made very clear in this Sydney Morning Herald article, includes cyber sinning by virtual adultery. I wish I could tell you that this is a problem limited to Australia. Of course, it's not. The internet is a worldwide phenomenon, and this form of sinning over the internet or by means of the internet is an international phenomenon. And I can tell you, I know personally that there are people whose marriages have been wrecked by this kind of adultery. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to call this for what it is. No man has any right to develop a romantic relationship with any other woman than his wife, period. No woman has any right to develop a romantic relationship with any man other than her husband, period. This kind of adultery is destroying homes because it leads to what the old lawyers used to call an alienation of affection. It leads to broken hearts, broken families, and broken lives. There is a progression to this, and the paper makes this clear in its article, citing authorities in the Center for Online and Internet Addiction. There's that addiction word all over again. The researcher says it starts with very, very subtle messages sent back and forth. It moves from chatting to photo swapping and then to intimate confessions and then to elaborated descriptions of what adultery is contemplated. We know the greatest corrective to this is offered by the Lord Jesus Christ. Let's remember what he said in the Sermon on the Mount. In Matthew chapter 5, verses 27 through 30, Jesus said this, "You have heard it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body go into hell." Let's just extrapolate from that for a moment. If your computer leads you to sin, turn it off. Get it out. Throw it away. Don't have an occasion for sin sitting in your home that threatens your integrity and your marriage and your family. It's a small thing. Turn it off. Get it out. Well, of course, we've been following the debate over evolution and intelligent design. The newspapers are going at it fast and furious. Over the last several days, the New York Times has made it something of an obsession. But what's interesting in today's article that's found on the online edition is that it finally gets to the bottom line issue. Is there a place for the Creator in the universe? That's the bottom line, isn't it? In the confrontation between naturalistic materialism and the biblical worldview, that's the big question. If not God, then who? If not God, then how? It really does impact how we understand who we are and how we are to live. Heroism, they say, is missing in our day. I don't know about that, but I do know there are some heroes among us. We're going to be talking to one of them in just a moment. Colonel Bob Prince is going to be our guest. The Great Raid is going to be our topic. You don't want to miss it. I'm Albert Mohler. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The movie The Great Raid is open in limited release across the United States. It's a very interesting movie. I have to tell you, it's one of the most moving films that I have ever seen. I went to see it last Monday. I had heard about it. I had read about it. I'm fascinated with the history of World War II and military history, and especially with this particular raid. This was a raid on the Cabanatuan POW camp in the Philippines. And here's the story. When General Douglas MacArthur and his troops landed back on the Philippines, he had promised, "I will return." He did return. But as he was making his way across the Philippines, the Japanese, in a panic, tried to hide the atrocities they had committed against American POWs. And so in the course of trying to hide the evidence, they were literally eliminating POWs. They slaughtered them. And they had the intention of killing all of the POWs in the Cabanatuan POW camp. The Americans knew about this, but by definition, they had to get ahead of Douglas MacArthur's forces, the American forces, in order to rescue the 500 Americans, emaciated, many of them sick, many of them near death. In order to rescue them, they had to go 30 miles behind enemy lines, passing through a territory in which there were upwards of 30,000 Japanese troops. It was about 150 American troops who made it under the command of Lieutenant Colonel Henry Moosey and Captain William Prince. Captain Bob Prince was 25 years old when he planned, plotted, and strategized the rescue attempt at the Cabanatuan POW camp. He is now 85 years old, very much alive, and ready to talk about it. Let's welcome to the Albert Mohler Program Captain Bob Prince, now living in the Seattle, Washington area. Welcome, Captain.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm doing wonderfully, and we are very honored to have you on the program. I have to tell you, when I saw the movie last Monday night, I had no idea that I would be able to talk to you. It's a great honor for me, and it's a great honor for our audience. Captain Prince, just tell me, what was it like, as you look back now, 60 years, what was it like to have led that force in this rescue?
Well, it's probably the most satisfying thing that ever happened to me in my life, because the real heroes of this thing are the POWs, and after 3 years of mistreatment, it was just a great thing to release them.
Now, I read a news article, an interview-based article with you in the Seattle Times, and in this article you say you knew that these POWs were in bad shape, but you had no idea how bad until you actually saw them.
That's true. We had no way of knowing how they'd been treated, but we suspected that it had not been good.
Well, as I saw the movie, I saw the unfolding of the story. Since seeing the movie, I've read two books about the rescue, Hampton Sides' book, Ghost Soldiers, and William Breuer's book, The Great Raid. I think it was the latter book on which the movie was mostly based. I had no idea, just watching the movie, so much of what was behind it. But Captain Prince, you were the man who was assigned the task of strategizing and developing the plan. How do you come up with a plan to take 150 Americans 30 miles behind the Japanese lines?
Well, you should recognize that the Filipino people were very much anti-Japanese and very much pro-American. And we were essentially in farmland that was controlled by Filipino civilians and guerrillas. And as long as nobody notified the Japanese, they didn't even know we were there until we got close. And the Filipinos were supplied the ox carts that allowed us to get these men out of there that were in pretty bad shape. The Filipinos supplied two guerrilla forces that protected our flanks. So they were very important to the success of this mission.
Now, as depicted on the film, Captain Prince, you and your fellow soldiers had basically to crawl across a massive open field just to approach the POW camp. Very sophisticated plan you put in place, and you caught the Japanese by surprise.
Well, the reason we caught them by surprise after crawling across this open field in broad daylight was that another element of the success of this mission was an Air Force night fighter plane, a P-61, which had been sent in there for this purpose, and the pilot was expert at diverting attention to him just a few hundred feet above the prison camp. And according to the POWs, they told us later, everybody in the camp, POW or Japanese, were spellbound watching this pilot perform just at low altitudes above them. All during that time, we crawled across the open spaces.
Captain Prince, I think there are a lot of Americans alive today, in fact, I know, who simply don't know what the Bataan Death March was all about. That's what produced the POWs in this camp. Can you just tell your fellow Americans what that was all about?
Well, the Americans surrendered on Bataan expecting humane treatment, and they got just the opposite from the Japanese, who forced them to march 90 miles in without food and water, very little water. And many of them were killed by the Japanese en route for falling down or falling out, and it was a brutal affair. And then they spent the best part of 3 years in prison camps being underfed and beaten, and many of them were killed. It was a very sad experience.
Captain Prince, you yourself were afflicted with what has been described in the books and in the film as a crippling case of jungle rot. You were 25 years old. You were leading a force of less than 200 men. You were going far behind enemy lines. Why did you do it?
Why? Well, because that was the job assigned to us, and we were thrilled to be chosen to do it. The Ranger Battalion had 500 men in it, and they all wanted to go, but only 100 of us were needed, and so it was considered a privilege to be able to go on this raid.
Well, that right there is worth this entire conversation. There once was a time when Americans would be disappointed if they weren't sent. American soldiers wanted to go. You know, in the movie, Captain Prince, the statement is made by Colonel Moosey, I believe, when he says, "This will be the greatest thing you may ever do in your lives." Is that the way you felt back 60 years ago?
Well, I think I felt that afterwards, maybe, but there's too much anticipation before to be thinking in that way.
Well, what about the satisfaction when the POWs came,
yes,
were brought back? That must have been just unspeakable.
It was great. I say we were just thrilled to have been chosen and to be able to be part of this thing.
Well, Captain Prince, it's a real honor to have you on this program. I was thrilled to know that you are alive there in Seattle, and you are a living testimony to American heroism. You did receive one of the nation's highest awards upon the completion of this raid, but then you went on to serve your country until the war in the Pacific Theater was over, and then you came back and made your contribution here in the home front as well. Our guest today, Captain Bob Prince, U.S. Army Ranger who led the raid on the Cabana Tuan POW camp, featured in the movie The Great Raid. That's going to be our topic when we come back. There's controversy about the film, and that controversy tells us a great deal about the state of our culture today. We're living in times in which heroism is seen as an antiquarian notion, an eccentric thing of the past. But if ever we needed a reminder that heroism is needed in our day, maybe the controversy over this movie will help make that point clear. Thanks again to Captain Bob Prince. God bless you, sir. We'll be right back for conversation with you. This is the Albert Mohler Program.
I'm here to to tell you, men, we finally got a mission worthy of Rangers. We're going to push right through our front lines and rescue 500 American prisoners of war. Before you start congratulating yourselves, remember that you haven't achieved a thing yet. You're the best trained, least proven battalion in this whole army. This is your one chance to do something about it. And I mean one chance. Is that clear?
Yes, sir!
That from the movie The Great Raid. That voice is the voice of the character playing Lieutenant Colonel Henry Mucci, and he's the one who assigned Captain Bob Prince the responsibility of planning the raid on the Cabanatuan POW camp. You know, my blood's already coursing all over again. Having seen the movie, I can remember exactly what we were seeing at that time and the anticipation of seeing this story unfold. It was great to have Captain Prince as our guest. You know, I really appreciated what he had to say. When I asked him, why did you go, he said, look, we went because we were told to go, but then he said we wanted to go. There were 500 Rangers in that camp. All of them wanted to go. They felt left out if they couldn't go. And remember, that was a conscripted corps in the Great War, as it is now known, the greatest generation, as some call them, in World War II. I'm glad to say that valor continues in the American military service. Even right now, in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and around the world, there are Americans wearing uniform with the same kind of valor. I can only hope that their stories also get told. This story is told well in the movie The Great Raid. I don't know if you've seen it or not. Let me tell you right up front, it is rated R. And you've heard me talk about the brokenness of the rating system on this. I do not recommend R-rated movies, but I'm making an exception on this one, just like I made an exception with the movie The Patriot. It's because the R rating in this movie is because of war violence. There's no sex scene. There's nothing tawdry in this. There's some military language, euphemistically speaking, that comes out every once in a while. But even that is not extreme. The story is the story. And the story is of a violent act, ladies and gentlemen. It was the violent act of rescuing 500 American POWs. They didn't do it with slingshots. They didn't do it with threats. They did it with Army Rangers and a group known as the Alamo Rangers with particular skills who went behind enemy lines 30 miles, crawled on their bellies in an open sun day in order to rescue 500 American POWs. It is one of the greatest stories in American military history, but some of the reviewers don't like it. And by the way, it's not only a good story, a fantastic story, it is well told. Some of the reviews just represent the kind of cynicism we now expect from some on the cultural left. Alex Sandell published a review, which is found at RottenTomatoes.com. That's an accumulator of movie reviews, said the film is as black and white as any given State of the Union address delivered by President George W. Bush. That's his way of dismissing both. Wade Major in Box Office Magazine said this, the moral ambiguity and ambivalence that are at the heart of all great war films have been stripped away in favor of a facile cheerleading, almost all of which wears painfully thin. The Hollywood Reporter came out with a review suggesting that the movie too easily made the distinction between good and evil. Well, folks, this was good and this was evil. Now, we as Christians know that both sides were sinners. But the sinners who were planning to kill the POWs and the sinners who were planning to save the POWs were not on the same side. There is no moral equivalence here. There's no moral ambiguity here. There was nothing right in what the Japanese at that time plotted against these POWs, and there was everything right with what the Americans did in going to rescue them. Valor, courage, bravery, all of these were required. It's an incredible story. It also shows the heroism of the Filipino people who put their own lives at risk, not only those in uniform, but those who were not, in order to help the American team. This is an amazing story that reminds us why World War II was so important, that reminds us that we had better be thankful and understand that God's providence explains why we are here today and why we have the freedoms that we enjoy today. But we also need to understand that there were human instruments of tremendous courage, incredible, unspeakable honor who put their lives on the line. We heard from one of them today, Captain Bob Prince. I want to know what you think about what this says about Hollywood and the entire society. I want you to speak about whether or not this kind of film encourages you or whether you, along with some of these liberal reviewers, just see it as a simplistic story of black and white morality. I think the moral relativism and cynicism that has pervaded so much of the Academy has, well, it's clearly made its way through the ranks of Hollywood reviewers. There are some who love the movie, but there are those who hate it simply because it tells the story that they really don't want told. Tell us what you think. The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. You know, I think Americans, especially those in the younger generation, need to know the price that was paid in order that we can have the freedoms we now enjoy. And I'm thankful there are still some veterans of heroic actions like this, such as Captain Bob Price, who are alive to tell the story. And I'm thankful that there was someone in Hollywood willing to tell the story on film. The phone number, 877-893-8255. Coast to coast, this is the Albert Mueller Program.
Their mission was almost certain to fail.
There's too many unknowns. They cannot guarantee the safety of those prisoners.
250 Japanese in that camp. Another 1,000 at the river. 10,000 more nearby. Only 120 of us. I figure we're going to need a little miracle.
Well, a little miracle is what they got. They rescued 500 POWs. They did not lose one of them. And out of their force of 150, they took 30 miles behind the Japanese lines in the Philippines. They lost only two. Folks, that is a miracle. And it was a miracle that demonstrated human courage, heroism indeed. The story that you heard, just in terms of snippets there, the background of that is the rescue of 500 American POWs in the Cabana Tuan POW camp in the Philippines just before the Japanese were planning to exterminate them, to eliminate them, and to burn their bodies so that there would be no evidence about the atrocities that were committed within the camp. The Japanese had already done that previously. And as General Douglas MacArthur and the American forces were recapturing the Philippines, they knew that they had very little time in order to rescue these POWs before they were killed, and they did it. And some of those POWs are alive today, and the man who led the raid is alive today. He was our guest in the second segment of this program, Captain Robert Prince. And, you know, it's just a reminder to us that heroism is necessary. Without heroes, something dies in the American spirit. And without the heroism of these forces, these Americans in uniform, those POWs would have been lost. That's a story that is unfortunately not known to many Americans. I hope this movie is a great success so that more Americans will know about it. But the cynics in Hollywood are writing it off. Miramax has dumped the movie in the middle of the summer so that it will die a dignified death. It was held in the can, already completed for 2 years before they released it, and it was released in only a very limited release. I understand about 800 theaters around the country. By contrast, you have thousands of theaters in America showing The Dukes of Hazzard and The 40-Year-Old Virgin. That should tell you all you need to know about why we're in trouble. You can choose between The 40-Year-Old Virgin and the 85-year-old war hero, and you're going to have to choose which movie you want to see. Todd's calling from Whittier, California, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Todd, what do you make of all this?
It's just disappointing. It's just continuing to demonize the things that actually matter, self-sacrifice and, you know, the things that patriotism has built our country, anything to make that seem, you know, illogical and stupid thing to do. It's just sad to say, you know, my great uncle was among them, those that were rescued by Captain Prince. So, you know, for any of these stories, I mean, these are stories that I've been told as a youngster, but, you know, it's just anything to keep a cap on those type of things prevents people from being inspired, and it just continues to demonize that type of feelings in our country.
So, Todd, have you been able to see the movie yet?
No, sir, I haven't. And like I said, I live in Los Angeles suburb, and it's probably you probably won't see one single advertisement in this area.
Well, let me just encourage you, look it up and honor your uncle by going to see this film. And if you're dried-eyed at the end, demand your money back. It's not going to happen. It's going to reach your heart as well as your head. It is an incredible story. That's what makes these cynical reviews, I think, so sad, but nonetheless so clear as indications of where we are in this country. There is a sense in which the moral ambiguity embraced by so many on the cultural left and among the intellectual elites has blinded them to the fact that there are times when the difference between right and wrong is so clear that one has to do whatever is possible, even what appears to be impossible, for the sake of what is right. And all you have to do is see this film, much less read the accounts and, again, the books on which it is based. William B. Breuer's book, The Great Raid, and Hampton Sides' book, Ghost Soldiers, both of them absolutely fascinating. The pictures alone in Ghost Soldiers will reach your heart as you see these emaciated POWs, the survivors of the Bataan Death March, as they were liberated. They thought they were about to die. They knew, both by intuition and by reports through what was known as the bamboo grapevine, that's the gossip line that the Filipinos helped encourage. They knew that there had been atrocities and that POWs had been eliminated, and they were just ready for it to be their turn next. Don't you know they will never forget? Many of them now dead certainly never forgot when those American Rangers entered the POW camp and liberated them. The film accurately depicts the reality. Some of them were so sick that they were deranged. Some of them were so hopeless they had given up any hope of rescue. And when the Americans entered the compound, the POWs weren't sure at first whether they were rescuers or executioners. But they quickly understood that a rescue was underway, and that made all the difference. You know, the end of the film, I want to tell you, is for me the most moving part. And at that point, the actors are all off the screen. The end of the movie just has the theme music playing in the background with vintage black and white pictures of the actual survivors being welcomed home. Folks, it just doesn't get any more real than that. It's one of the most emotionally powerful segments of film I have ever seen. The very thought that some of those men are still alive, well, this is a reminder that 60 years has passed since that rescue. It took place early in 1945 as American forces were making their progress across the Pacific Theater and in particular throughout the Philippine Islands. Folks, this is the kind of valor that can be explained only by the fact that I believe our Creator has made us capable of incredible courage and action. He has planted within us a conscience that calls out to us. Nothing could propel men to do this but the inner knowledge that it was right. They weren't going to take lives so much as to save lives. Their purpose was to go and to do what was necessary in order to rescue 500 helpless and hopeless Americans who had been for 3 years mistreated and were now living under the threat of extermination. You know, 60 years is a long time. According to the demographers, that's three generations. The veterans of World War II are dying at a rate of 1,000 per day. There are a lot of Americans out there, the children, grandchildren, even great-children and great-great-grandchildren of the greatest generation who simply don't know these stories. That in itself is a tragedy. Like I say, I normally don't recommend R movies, and I certainly would never recommend one that has an R rating because of sexuality and perversion and all the rest, but that's not what this story is about. Something's broken in our rating system when this gets an R because it tells the truth about what Americans with valor did in war. And movies that depict the most tawdry and demented sexuality are rated PG or PG-13. You know, it's when you're living in strange times that you have to think most clearly. And we as Christians need to understand there are virtues that only we know have come from God, but He's implanted them in the human heart, and His glory is demonstrated whenever they shine. I'll be right back with some final thoughts. This is Albert Moeller.
And a moment in time when men of honor became soldiers of destiny.
This is the kind of glory you carry inside you for the rest of your life.
Nothing in our lives will ever be as important as this.
Ready? Ready. It's time. There's a price for freedom, a price some are willing to pay.
Well, that ought to send you right to the theater. If you heard nothing more than the last few seconds, you heard a story that needs to be told. It's a story that I believe is told well. My background is not cinematography. I know there are people who are different producers and different directors who would have done things differently, but I'll tell you what, I like the way the story is told. I like the way you see the plotting and the planning of this great raid. I like the way you're held in suspense until you see this thing unfolding before your eyes. And I love the way the movie ends where you see the black and white vintage photographs of the POWs who were rescued being welcomed home, first of all in San Francisco Harbor, where they came home and were greeted by their families and loved ones. When I think about this raid, I think of the issue of risk. Americans were willing to risk much in order to gain even more. There was tremendous risk in this. As Captain Prince said after the raid, if this had gone badly, it would have gone very badly. There was no way it could do anything otherwise. I think of preparation. As Colonel Mucci said of his men, you are the most prepared and least tested of all American troops. They had the preparation. You think also of planning. This was not some major league just risk undertaken without planning. This was a carefully strategized rescue mission. Right down to the last minute, who says what? What signal indicates what? Where do we go? How do we get out? Who's the last man out? All of this, I think, is fascinating for Americans to see, and of course, the courage and the valor. These were men who knew they were going 30 miles behind enemy lines where they could just as easily be betrayed by the spies that were there in the midst of these farming communities as they might be helped by the Filipinos who also wanted to see liberation from the Japanese. This is an important slice of American history. It's one of those stories that demands to be told. I believe it is told well. It's a compelling story. This shows to me the promise of film. The cinema has a power that other forms of entertainment and communication do not have. You get the combination of words and sound and visuals. I think this film would make a powerful impression on a lot of young people who need to see it. And because of the rating, they won't see it unless you take them. Go see it for yourself, and I think you'll want to take someone who needs to see this story and understand what it represents. Courage and valor are not dead. They're not antiquarian ideas of some aged, fading past. They must live with the human spirit even now, and we, as Christians, know why. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about what's important. This is the Albert Miller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.